James chapter 3. Lucas, I did hear the message this week. Lucas preached last week, James 3, on the tongue. As we continued this series on James. And so we've said very clearly, tried to define a big picture review that James is talking about. James is talking about faith as indistinguishable from works, in the sense that if you have faith, that faith will, in many areas of your life, show itself out in the way that we comport ourselves with people not like us, in the way that we deal with trials and tribulations, in any number, in last week, in if we have faith, that will be represented, will show up in the way that we speak, faith and words. So it's not just faith. It's not just faith, and then we're done. I trust God. I have faith. Faith always shows up in our works, in the things that we do, in the way that we respond to things, in the way that we live our life. And faith also impacts the words that we say, faith and words. The tongue, it will modify how it is that we speak. I find it that I'm not in any way going to re-preach his message from last week. He did an adequate, wonderful, perfect job. But I do find it interesting that there are people that claim to be believers and have faith, and yet their words don't seem to match up. How many know what I'm talking about? The words don't seem to line up with the profession of faith that they have, which tells you that it's just a profession of faith, but there's no real faith there. Anybody can profess faith. Anybody can say, I have faith. Anybody can profess it with their words, but possessing it is two different things. Do you have faith? Are you in faith? And if you do, and if you have faith, it'll impact the way that you live. It'll impact the way that you talk. Okay? Is everybody following me today? Let us not fall into the trap of believing that you can be a Christian with faith and not be impacted by that faith in positive ways. So that James says in verse 12, this is where Lucas concluded, but I want to read this and then we'll start on verse 13. In verse 12, he says, can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh water. And so remember, James says, does a spring of fresh water produce salt water? No, it doesn't. Does a fig tree produce apples? No, it doesn't. Fruit does not determine the tree. The tree determines the fruit. So if you're hearing today and say, I need to just start living right. I need to start talking right, and then I'll be a Christian. Hold on, hit the brakes. Oh, pay attention. No. If you are in faith, then what will naturally happen is you'll start to see fruit evidenced. The fruit doesn't come first. It's the tree. It's the tree, the nature of the tree that determines the fruit. And so the big test here is, are we the kinds of Christians that are seeing evidence of that by fruit, by the works that we have, by the words that we say? And if we're not, it's not the fruit's problem. I got to try harder. But hold on, apple trees don't try to produce apples. Apple trees produce apples as a consequence of what they are. It's not, if you say, sorry, I just got to double up and do better. Listen, at some point we have to start thinking like James. Maybe you're not in faith. Maybe you're not in faith. And you've been to church your whole life, and you think you're in faith, but you're not in faith because the evidence of your life isn't conducive to what faith produces. Okay. And so now James goes into something very targeted, and that is, I think what James does is he starts to apply faith now in the arena of how a life in faith impacts relationships. And so I'm going to read 13 to the end of the chapter, and then we'll start looking at this. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds and the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have jealousy, bitter jealousy, and selfish ambition in your heart, so do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy, notice the language here of relationship sort of language, because this is where this is going to start to apply. How do we comport ourselves with others? For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is this disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is, notice this wonderful language, pure, it's peaceable, it's gentle, it's reasonable. It's full of mercy and good fruits. It's unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So James now is shifting, and he uses wisdom. And what is wisdom? What is wisdom? So he uses wisdom as a way of describing the ways that we think that impact the way that we act, the way that we do things. And so wisdom as opposed to, and he says godly wisdom and demonic wisdom. Okay. So what is wisdom? Wisdom is not being able to make a decision about what house you buy or what car you buy. Although it certainly can be that. Wisdom is not more than this. Wisdom is the ability for you to know what honors God. Basic. Wisdom is the capacity that you have in the Spirit of God to know and to be asking, what is it that honors God? What is it that honors God? I was had an opportunity this week to talk to somebody, and struggling really bad with his marriage, and just talking to him, and I said, listen, are you in counseling? Nobody you know, don't try to figure it out. It was not your husband. This. I said, are you talking to any counselors? Are you talking to any pastors? Yeah, we're meeting with a Christian counselor. And I said, well, walk through what that Christian counselor is telling you. And I said, well, and so the Christian counselor was basically saying that it divorce may wind up happening, and that if it happens, we're going to try to. It was a mess. And I'm scratching my head, and I told him, I said, listen, fire that counselor. Fire that counselor. Find a pastor that you trust that's going to be able to look at you and say, this is what God has to say about the matter. This is what God wants you to do. This is what honors God. That's the only question that we're concerned with. What honors God? And what honors God here is not a divorce. Period. End of story. We don't have to wonder about it. Well, let's figure out if this isn't God's will or not. It's not divorce. And I was all, okay, that makes sense. I'm kind of thinking, what are we doing? What are we doing? The whole thing here is in relationships to try to honor God with our relationships and to have the wisdom to know what honors God. What honors God? That's wisdom. And so, my Bible. And so, here's what the James says, is any among you wise? He's going to define wisdom. He's going to define wisdom for us in how it plays out. Let him show by his good behavior, his deeds of gentleness and wisdom. Okay, so wisdom, and just like faith, shows itself out in works, right? It will show in good behavior. It will show in good behavior. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. Let's stop here. Let's look at this verse. I want to, if I can, for sake of adding clarity to how this impacts relationships, I want to look at this in terms of, I want to apply as we go through, I want to apply this into marriage, but then you can apply it to the relationship that you have with your kids. You can apply it to the relationship that you have with your church friends, with your neighbors. But for ease of illustration, we're going to work through this like marriage counseling, okay? We're going to work through this like if I were, and I've gone through this pastor before in marital counseling, we're going to walk through this like a marriage counseling, okay? So if, and I believe that it does, if you're married and you are in a marriage today, then this applies to you. And you should listen to it because your marriage can use a good dose of this. So, no, but my marriage is good. Your marriage is messed up because you're in it. And not just you. But your spouse is in it. So it's messed up. It's woefully messed up. And what we need is God and his wisdom to bear in your relationships, right? Does that make sense? And so just receive it. Receive today this word. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. What is jealousy? It's covetousness, the 10th commandment. Don't covet. Don't be jealous of others and the things that they have. Don't look around at other people, what your spouse is able to get away with, or what your or your kids or the friendships that they have, or whatever it is. Don't look at others. This is not helpful. Looking at others, indeed, is taking your eyes off of making sure that your relationship is God oriented. Don't worry about others. Don't be jealous of others. And selfish ambition. This word is the word from which we get in the original language. Is the same word as rivalry. As rivalry. I am in shock the last 2 years at how much marital counseling I have opportunities to do. And from people that you don't know, people that just come to the office and we're struggling with our marriage. We're struggling with relationships. We're struggling with my relationship with my kids. Many times it is rivalry mentality that's the problem. It's selfish. It's I'm going to have it my way. Oh, what a bitter rivalry is, a selfish ambition in your heart. What that is when your wife wants it one way and you want it another way, and you can't come to terms with what it is. But I'm going to win. I'm putting my foot down. This is the way it's going to be. That is a rivalry. That is relationship language. Hey, it could be with your kids. It could be with your neighbor. Whatever it is, it's what Paul encourages us to do in Philippians chapter 2. Consider your thing less important than God's thing. Consider your thing less important than others. What your desire is less important than others. When you put yourself above the relationship that you have, your desire and your thing, your likes, your wants, your ambitions, when you put that above your spouse, when you have to be right, you have to be king, you have to get your way, when you do that, you mess the whole thing up. Because you can have The marriages that work well, that doesn't work well, but marriages that work well with bitter rivalries is when the spouse learns to just be a doormat. And that doormat gets to get walked on, then they have bitterness in their heart because they never get their way. You're perfectly happy. A bitter rivalry is the capacity for you to always think that your opinion, your way, your preference is more important than anybody else, and you're going to steamroll your way into being right, into getting your way every time. God, that's disaster. That is disaster. And so in Jesus, if you can have a relationship where you don't have to have your way and you don't have to have your way, you give deference. You give deference to the other party, because their ambition is more important than yours, is as important to you as your own ambition. When that happens, you have good relationships. But I am right. I can tell you, 100% of the arguments Kelly and I have, 100%, I think I'm right on those 100% of the time. 100% of the time. Do you know why I know that that's true? There wouldn't be an argument otherwise. Right? Well, the argument is because I believe that I'm right 100% of the time, consequently, that Kelly has the same mentality. Well, she thinks she's right, and so we're just on different sides of this equation. And to avoid that bitter rivalry, it will take one of us, or no, not one of us, both of us saying we don't want relationship where bitter rivalry, bitter ambition, selfish ambition is what orients the way that we act, the way that we respond to one another in relationship. No selfish ambition in your heart. Do not be arrogant. What's that come from? It's arrogance. It's arrogance to think that you're always right. You may be always right, but you, Dr. Phil always talks about... I don't watch Dr. Phil, but I watched it some. I mean, I'm not against Dr. Phil. I'm not for Dr. Phil. I like Dr. Phil. But I'm not putting a stamp on Dr. Phil. But I am. He says, don't be a right fighter. You know, people that always want to be right. You know, and they're willing to be miserable. They're willing to be miserable and make the whole world around them miserable so long as they're right. They would rather be right than be at peace. How many know those kind of people? Does anybody know those kind of people? Are you married to one of those people? No, you don't have to answer that. You don't have to be right. You don't have to. It's better, verse 18, and we'll get to it. It's better to be at peace than to be right. It's better to, now verse 18 doesn't say that, but it does talk about peace. So don't be arrogant and so lie against the truth. Well, I think this is powerful. The mentality that gives you the in your heart, that your selfish ambition, your covetous spirit, that, and you just believe that you're right and this is the best way to operate, and that's your mentality. You are deceived. You are living in a lie, and in so doing, you've denied the truth of the way that it is that you should live. You're living in a lie. This wisdom, what wisdom? Oh, the wisdom that brings about bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. The wisdom that lies against what is God's wisdom, what is true. That wisdom is not that which comes from above. What that kind of living is not from God. The Spirit of God isn't in it. I want a Christian home. Then you're going to have to, if you want a Christian home, you can't have a Christian home with bitterness and jealousies and all. It doesn't work. There's no Christian home that has all that stuff in it, because that kind of mentality, that kind of wisdom doesn't come from God. So God's not going to honor it. God's not going to bless you. God's not going to honor your marriage. God's not going to honor your relationships with your kids when this is the kind of thing. I have to always be careful when you know, talk about with peers and your spouse, maybe that's one thing. But then what about your kids? Your selfish ambition there. They want your way. I've found, though my kids will maybe not agree with what I'm about to say, but I have found, at least I've tried to orient my parenting in a way that I say yes to things that maybe would be inconvenient, but they might inconvenience me to allow them to do something or to answer yes. But I try to say yes as much as I say no. So I try to pick the things that I say no about. And the reason is because I think God's like that. God gives us plenty of green pastures. God gives us restrictions, absolutely. But I don't want to. I want to model God's heart. God's happy to say yes a lot. Thank God that He says yes and amen to so many of the desires of our heart. And so I try to be, but there are no's. There are no's. But you don't have to have it your way, even necessarily with your kids. You can give space and opportunity for your kids to do things that you might not sin, but things, opportunities that you might not have done. That's fine. What I want to do as a parent is model. I want to try to be as honest about how God operates with me and try to apply that to my kids as a parent. We don't have to always be right. And sometimes with our kids, we're wrong. And a little bit of modeling humility is a good thing. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but look at this. So it's not from above. In other words, it's not from God, but it is earthly, natural, demonic. This kind of turns the screws. It's earthly. In other words, it's oriented around what makes sense at this level, right? It's oriented around what makes sense here in this kingdom. It's oriented around what makes sense to my flesh and what feels good around my natural self. So it orients, so those three words aren't just, those aren't all synonyms. It's earthly in the sense that it orients around what makes sense outside of God's kingdom. It's natural in the sense that it's not spiritual. It's the opposite of spiritual. So it appeals to my flesh. And it's demonic in that it goes against God. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. What are we talking about? We're talking about demonic and we're talking about how we comport ourselves with people? Yes. You mean, James, that the way that we act with people, the way that we respond to people, the way that we have selfish ambition with people, you're saying that the logic, the mindset, the wisdom that brings that out in me is demonic? Yes, that's what James is saying. I'm struck by that. I'm struck by how strong the language that is. It isn't just that you're having marital problems. It's that there's a wisdom that comes from the way that you're acting that is demonic wisdom. It's against God. Does anybody else find that a strong word? The way that we act around people, the way that we act with our family, the way that we comport ourselves with the people that God's given us relationship with, that can reflect demonic wisdom. Yeah, that's exactly what James is saying. We shouldn't skip by it like it's just something that James is saying as a rhetorical argument. James is telling us this. Hey. Basically, this is what this is. This is like a red flag being propped up in the middle of this passage and James kind of waving it and saying, pay attention, this is really important. This is earthly, natural, demonic wisdom. Avoid, red flag, really important. And yet we treat these kinds of activities in relationship as if they're just, this is the worst thing that we could possibly do. Well, that's just fill in the blank with the person that you have in your mind. Oh, that's just such and such. That's just how such and such is. I think there's been a lot of damage done in the church by excusing behavior with that kind of language, that kind of flippancy. That's just how such and such acts. Well, James doesn't say it that way. James puts a red flag and says, hold on, be careful. That wisdom is demonic wisdom. The wisdom that births out that kind of behavior is earthly, natural, demonic. Do you have ears to hear that this morning? Everybody listen to that? And then, for where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, this is what we just talked about, the bitter jealousy, verse 14, the selfish ambition. Where that exists, there is, notice this, disorder, translated elsewhere and can be translated, chaos. There is disorder and every evil thing. I think the reason why James brings these two categories up, jealousy and selfish ambition, is because out of that kind of behavior comes a disorder. And if you've been involved in any kind of friendships where marriages are falling apart, then you know what I'm talking about, where everything is just chaotic in the marriage, in your home, with kids. Chaos, chaos, chaos. How many would just raise your hand and say, without admitting fault of your own, would say, I understand, I've seen that before. I've seen how marriages and relationships are just chaos. There's chaos. I will say that One of the root problems is a wisdom that brings forth this kind of attitude, this kind of action, jealousy and selfish ambition. And out of those two things, the things that we've been talking about, out of that kind of bitter rivalry comes forth chaos in a marriage, in a home. I just can't. Everything's just chaos in my home. It's chaos in my home. Maybe there's a jealousy and selfish ambition problem. Maybe somebody needs to learn a little bit of humility in that home. Maybe that home needs to learn some humility and stop having rivalry ways of thinking through and acting out and responding to one another. Nobody's falling asleep. Nobody's falling asleep. Don't fall asleep. It's getting good now. Chaos. 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 I tell you what, I don't want, and again, I want to just say this, because chaos, disorder, notice verse 18, the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in what? Peace. Peace as opposed to chaos and disorder. I want a peaceable home, not a chaotic home. I want a home in which God rules and reigns, and the wisdom of God rules and reigns in my home, such that the kind of way that we act, the wisdom that we have in our home, the way that we think through things is biblical and godly and righteous wisdom, so that there's peace in my home. There's no chaos. So there's disorder and chaos and every evil thing. And every evil thing. That's pretty broad brushstroke, isn't it? The worldly wisdom that births out selfish ambition, rivalry, and jealousy, that kind of wisdom brings forth, God's word says here, every evil thing. Every evil thing could be translated every evil, and I've got this written above my word thing, every evil practice. Every evil practice, which I think is a better translation, and goes with what James is talking about. Faith brings forth actions. But the wisdom from above. Okay, now, notice the tremendous contrast in wisdoms, in mindsets, and how they bring. Notice the contrast. But the wisdom from above, okay, from God, is as a chief characteristic, is first pure. In other words, it's from God. It is exactly what it ought to be. The wisdom from God is without error, without stain. It's sure, it's pure, it's true. So the wisdom from above is first pure. Then, oh man, I tell you this, if you have opportunity to talk to marriages that are in trouble, James chapter 3. James chapter 3. A marriage is in trouble because there's chaos in it, and I just got to get out. I can't live like this anymore. I'm at my wit's end. What they're saying is they need a marriage in which peace is a mainstay of the home. Well, how do you get that? Wisdom from above. The wisdom from above is pure, and then it's peaceable. It's gentle. Listen, everybody paying attention now. This is important. This is where rubber meets the road. It's peaceable. It's gentle. Notice the language. It's reasonable. It's reasonable. Not everything has to be no. There can be yes. There can be blessing. There can be freedom in Jesus. There's a reasonable, full of mercy. How many have met people that parents that their kids mess up and then the hammer just comes down hardcore? You know what I'm talking about? Just the hammer comes down. You messed up. That's it. You walked across the street without asking. Oh, that's it. That's it. You're grounded till you're 18. Listen. Full of mercy. Full of mercy. If God treated us, and I'm saying we should be consistent good parents, but we should be merciful parents and understanding. We should be reasonable. We should be reasonable. There's some parents that are so just like that. If God treated us that way, we'd be miserable. If God chose to dispense judgment the way that we do, without mercy. Imagine that. If for everything that we do, God just came down on us the way that we do with others. Reasonable and full of mercy. That, again, relationships. And good fruits. Unwavering and without hypocrisy. In other words, my rule to you, I'm not going to apply it to myself. If you're parents, grandparents, pay attention. If the standard that you live by isn't the one that you apply to your kids, that's a problem. If you say, well, hold on, you do that. You get to do that. I've seen this in parenting. Don't use that language. Well, you do it. Yeah, but I'm me and you're you. Hold on. Hold on, hypocrite. Apply to your children what you're willing to work on and apply to yourself. Is everybody getting toe stepped on today? Pretty good. And the seed of whose fruit? We're done. The seed of whose fruit. Notice the language now. Fruit. This is the way it will be. If you're in Jesus, this is fruit. This is the way that you're going to live. This is what's going to come out. The fruit is righteousness. The seed whose fruit is righteousness. So what kind of fruit? What kind of fruit is verse 12 talking about? Fig trees are gonna produce this. Okay, what do Christians bring forth? If I'm a tree and I bring forth fruit, what is the fruit? Righteousness. Well, it's righteousness. That's the fruit, right? If you're in Jesus, the fruit that you're gonna is the godly wisdom, the righteousness that comes from that is sown. That righteousness is going to be sown in peace to those who make peace. So I don't know why God's word here in chapter 3 ends with peace, but just notice the language. Is that the kind of life that you want in relationship with others? Is peaceable, sown in peace. Man, so many relationships, they're in tatters because there's chaos. Listen, you're applying ungodly demonic wisdom to the way that you live your life, and out of that comes selfish ambition, Out of that comes a vicious rivalry and jealousy, and out of that is chaos. Better to apply the humility that God has in the Spirit of God, to apply that to our relationships such that peace is ultimately what comes out of the relationships that we have. I want peace in my home. I'm going to have to apply godly wisdom to my home. I'm going to have to apply godly wisdom to my home. And if I do that, my relationships in my home with others around me will be good. There's a lot here today. I feel like I was jumping around. I felt totally like I was jumping all over the place. And I tell you, as a pastor, I'm going to walk away saying, I did not do a good job today. And I say that to say this. But I believe that in something, in all that I said, God has something for you. Not to hear, but to hear and apply. To hear and to apply. And I trust that you'll do that today, whatever it is. It might be for your marriage, it might be for your home, it might be for your kids. Don't listen to this message today and not apply it today. You have to apply what the Spirit of God is teaching you. Let's not be a church of just hearers. Let's apply. There's plenty here for me to apply to my own life. I trust that you're going to apply as the Lord convicted you.